racism, patriarchy, and the way forward for socialist politics. Again, that's Asada Shakur talks about socialist development in Cuba, Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 236 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
A Washington Post investigation revealed that of all fatal shootings by police in 2015, almost one quarter involved a person who was mentally unstable. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on April 4th to hear St. Helens Police Chief Terry Moss discuss how crisis intervention training is changing how police interact with people with mental illness and how police are helping to divert them from incarceration. That's Prison Pipeline, April 4th at 6:30 p.m.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight I'll be airing audio from a performance that took place on October 18th, 2015 at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. The performance was called With You on a Journey. It was the culmination of a series of writing workshops for family members of people in prison. The performance included 10 family members and 11 monologues, which told stories of having a loved one in prison. Tonight is part 5, and it includes the 9th and 10th monologues. This performance has been aired in segments over the last few months. We'll begin with director Chris Carsmore introducing tonight's monologues.
Gretchen and Valerie have stories which are in some ways similar. Both of them have experienced how, in spite of all the pain and stress, their family members' time in prison has resulted in some very positive changes.
Finding my voice. I have 3 sons. As a single parent for most of their childhood, I never imagined that anything beyond schoolwork and a family would be in their future. I did not raise them to go to prison. But substance abuse, a lack of direction, and being a follower paved the way for my youngest son, Richard, to be caught up in the wrong crowd and sentenced to 156 months in prison, which is 13 years. Sentencing courts always calculate out in months, as if the translation to years isn't terrifying enough. The look of disbelief and shock on my son's face as he heard the sentence and concluded that he would be 34 upon release is burned into my heart and soul. I recognized my son's life would never be what I dreamed it could be. Instead, we were on the brink of a nightmare. I was filled with fear. I couldn't sleep. I worried about him sleeping. Was his pillow soft enough? Did he even have a pillow? Was he cold? Was he hungry? Was he safe? Was he being bullied? I had to do something. Crying in the shower wasn't fixing anything. So I took advantage of family counseling to try to figure out how I could be a parent to an adult son in prison. Richard's two older brothers and my husband at the time were always too busy to go. Since my three dogs weren't allowed, I was on my own. Richard frequently joked about my family counseling for one. What do you do when you feel your life is spinning out of control? What do you do when you don't know who to talk to about the challenges you're facing? There are fears that stay with you from the moment your eyes open, throughout the day, waking you up periodically while you're trying to sleep. Really, what do you do? Most people continue with their lives, working, caring for children, paying the bills. Some of us find someone to talk to. I knew there were support groups, but never had an occasion to join one because life was okay up until that point. I had had no hugely traumatic experiences until my son Richard was sentenced to 156 months in prison. People who have a loved one in prison don't talk to just anyone about their situation. We tend to share our stories with only those people that we know won't judge us or our loved one, who is most likely the person we married, gave birth to, or perhaps were raised with. My counselor helped me get through the early days by listening to me talk. Well, actually, it was venting about attorneys, judges, courtrooms, and the horrors of being in a situation that was out of my control. In retrospect, the understanding and compassion that was extended to me from my family counselor, for one, paved the way for my future involvement with Oregon Cure. We're a state chapter of an international, nonprofit, criminal justice reform organization. CURE is an acronym for Citizens United for the Rehabilitation of Errants. Errants is old-fashioned phraseology that means someone who has strayed from appropriate behavior. CURE was formed in the early 70s when Charlie Sullivan was protesting against the war in Vietnam, went to jail, and upon release, he decided people in jail and prison aren't treated very well. So he and his wife Pauline turned this into their life's work. CURE is founded and operates on the belief that we can make a change by having a place at the table where conversations are held and decisions are made. We are not an adversarial organization. Instead, we seek to educate, inform, and sometimes remind our lawmakers and the public that 95% of people in Oregon's prisons today will be released. Throughout his sentence, my son spent years in solitary confinement. While my preference would have been for him to avoid segregation at all costs, it certainly introduced me to the abuse and overuse of isolation in Oregon's prisons. It would have been easy to rail against the system and scream about the unfairness and ineffectiveness of everything from mandatory minimums to inadequate health care to isolation. But what would the end result have been? Does anyone hear you if you scream? Or do they shut you out as a radical to avoid at all costs? We don't need to argue. We need to be a part of the discussion that determines sentencing and prison conditions. Are we angry? Heck yeah. But our anger needs to fuel the fires of social change by building relationships with people who are making decisions that affect so many lives. As the initial shock of my son's sentence began to diminish, I came to understand more clearly that if I didn't join with people trying to make a change, then I was accepting the fact that the system worked. I came to understand that there were decent and caring people working for the Department of Corrections. The Oregon Cure Board of Directors increased our contact with DOC administration to include monthly meetings with key staff, and we held annual meetings with the director and key management personnel. We took part in a variety of work groups on visiting. We advocated for lower phone rates. We responded to a number of Oregon administrative rule changes. We advocated for improving incentive levels, and most recently, the performance award system, which determines how much a person who works while incarcerated is paid while they are in custody. And the average rate is about $50 a month for some of the higher paying jobs. My son completed a cognitive behavior program and was released on March 11th of this year, 2.5 years earlier than expected, and he's adjusted remarkably well. I believe this is a testimony to the advice that Oregon Cure gives to family members, to maintain contact, to keep our loved ones engaged in circumstances taking place outside of the prison walls, and to give them hope when they get out that they will find a way to be successful. Richard has attended the last two Cure intake orientations that we facilitate with Department of Corrections, and also the last two Washington County release orientations. Richard is living proof that our loved ones can get through a prison sentence. What I'd really like to share with you today, though, is a question that my son posed to me about halfway through his sentence. He asked me to consider the fork in his life's road. One way leading to college and a career, the other leading to criminal activities and prison. Which fork would I want him to take? If I only considered how his decision affected my life, would I choose the road well-traveled with friends and coworkers who hadn't a clue about the inequities in our criminal justice system, continue to lead a full life with work, travel, and hobbies? Or would I choose the road less traveled with the pain and suffering that comes with having a loved one in prison, but also comes with an incredible bonus of meeting precious, caring people who brought new depth and meaning to my life? To me, the answer is obvious. I chose to expand my comfort zone. I stretched, I reached out, people inside reached back. I helped my neighbors, my family, my new best friends. And I focused on the things that I can change. I can make a difference. We can all make a difference. There may not always be a cure for pain and suffering. However, for our loved ones inside prison, and their families outside, there's cure.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight we're airing audio of monologues from an event titled With You on the Journey. Next up is Valerie.
The gift. Are there things in your life that you wish you didn't know? Uncomfortable, unpleasant things about people, institutions, or yourself? The last 6 years of my life have been a runaway train of things I never wanted to know. 6 years ago, I was leading a comfortable life, married, living in a nice neighborhood, going to work every day, taking pleasant vacations. I had worries and challenges, but in hindsight, they seem trivial. I was living a simple, easy life. Then it all changed. I got that call. You know the one. The one when your world gets turned upside down. Among the many things I now know is what it's like to get a call from some lawyer telling me that my brother is in jail. My brother? That doesn't seem very likely. I know what it's like to come face to face with a website page full of felony charges that could land him in prison for the rest of his life. I know what it's like to walk into his house after it has been ransacked by the police. I know what it's like to come up with an astronomical amount of bail money and 2 days later get a call from my brother saying, "I tried to kill myself last night." I know what it's like to visit him in the psych ward. I know what it's like to see my brother cry like a child as I take him to the courthouse to start his 8.5-year sentence in a prison system of which we have heard nothing but horror stories. I know what it's like to visit my 60-year-old brother in prison and watch him have to raise his hand to ask to go to the bathroom and be told he has to wait. I know what it's like to get a call saying that the gang members won't allow him to sit at any of the meal tables. I know that there are people out there who steal the identities of newly incarcerated individuals and run up enormous credit card debt. I know the terror of realizing that those people know where I live. I know what it's like to have a few people who I thought cared about me treat me unkindly because of something my brother did. I know what Measure 11 is. Get tough on crime. Yes, and take the ability to use judgment out of the system and allow district attorneys to decide how long they want the defendant to spend in prison, charging them with the crime that has that mandatory sentence length. I know that some DAs call their buddies and hand them a civil case that allows them to put 30% or more of the settlement into their own pocket with little time or effort invested. While I wish with all my heart I had not had to learn those things, buried beneath the layers of tears and terror, this tragedy has brought both me and my brother some incredible gifts. I have learned wonderful things, had good experiences, and both my brother and I have been changed for the better. While the few people who were cruel still take up way too much real estate in my mind, most people have been incredibly kind, loyal, and supportive. 30 of my brother's friends showed up for his going away party. I have met nice people and made new friends. My brother has been changed and is trying to do good time. He's a hospice volunteer, sitting with men who would otherwise be dying alone in prison, separated by razor wire and concrete walls from their loved ones. He leads fundraising activities that have raised money for the local food bank, local charity events, and for new books and yoga equipment for the prison. He has stepped way outside his comfort zone and acts in the annual Shakespeare play. He advocates strongly for himself and attends mental health groups to deal with his issues. He participates in Toastmasters and has actively recruited new members to an organization that teaches public speaking skills to a group of men, many of whom have not completed high school. Their next project is to conduct mock interviews to increase the chances that the guys can get jobs when they get out of prison. Another thing I now know is that 95% of people in prison are going to get out. What are we doing, either while they're in prison or once they get out, that would make it likely for them to avoid criminal behavior, find jobs, and housing? You know the answer. Nothing. My brother does yoga every day, exercises, and has learned to crochet. There is no way I can convey to you how unlikely any of those activities would have been for him 6 years ago. I know that there are hundreds of kindly volunteers who spend part of their free time in Oregon prisons, making these activities possible and providing some respite from the monotony of doing time. I know that not all of the guards are disrespectful. Some of them are civil, and some are actually kind and concerned. And I have been changed. This has been an awakening for me. I left my comfortable job and my uncomfortable marriage and embarked on a new career. I have gone back to school, and once I finish, I hope to be a drug and alcohol counselor working with men referred from the criminal justice system. I expect to be making significantly less money than I did when I started my business career nearly 30 years ago. But I have a passion for this work, and I consider myself incredibly fortunate. My brother has 3.5 years to go. I am exhausted from managing his life, keeping up a steady stream of correspondence, being available when he needs someone to talk to, looking up things on the internet for him, and squeezing in visits to him 3 hours away. But I am grateful for my new life. Would I be willing to give it up for him never to have committed a crime? Yes. And I am grateful for the gift. What do I want you to take away from my talk? As a society and as individuals, we have to give up the tendency to think that some lives matter less than other lives. The people who are in prison are human beings. They have committed crimes and are experiencing their punishment, but they are more than their crimes. They have done bad things, but they are not bad people. They have also done good things and should be recognized as fully complex human beings, like me and you. They have families and friends who care about them and who are deeply impacted by the situation. As Henry James said, 3 things are important in life. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind. And the third is to be kind.
We have one final piece. Before we get to that, we just wanted to mention briefly what is not part of this performance. We realize that we don't represent all of the kinds of people who are family members of people in prison. The fastest growing group of people in prison is women. Then, too, our presenters here are middle class professionals, though it's people in poverty who are most likely to go to prison. The kind of experiences we have talked about today can and do happen to anyone and everyone. In fact, in the United States, sometimes known as the incarceration nation, there are about 2.2 million people in prison. So we have imprisoned 1/4 of the people who are currently incarcerated worldwide. About 80% of them are there for nonviolent substance abuse-related crimes. And it costs us, as a society, $80 billion a year to run our prisons. One important part of this story is the mass incarceration in our country of people of color, particularly of African Americans. You may know that African Americans are in prison in numbers far greater than their percentage of the population as a whole. In fact, 6 times greater than whites. What you may not know, however, is that although whites in our country commit many more crimes, particularly drug-related crimes, than do blacks, typically whites are arrested in far smaller numbers for similar crimes. In fact, 5 times as many whites are using drugs than blacks, yet the latter are sent to prison for drug offenses at 10 times the rate of whites. It's truths like these which are at the core of the festering wound of racism in our culture.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. I want to thank Carol Imani for organizing With You on the Journey, Director Chris Karsmar, Assistant Director Melissa Schmitz, and all the participants of With You on the Journey. Stay connected with You on the Journey at facebook.com/withyouonthejourney, which is all one word. I will post notifications of when the next segment will air on that page. You can also find Carol Imani's email address there. If you have questions about the project or would like to share your stories as a family member of someone in prison, again, that's facebook.com/withyouonthejourney. On Thursday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, KBOO Community Radio, Oregon Jericho, and PDX MeshNet will present We Are Legion, the story of the hacktivists, film screening. We Are Legion is a documentary film about the culture and history of Anonymous, the notorious hacktivist collective. The screening on April 28th is a fundraiser. Donations will support the defense funds of imprisoned whistleblowers Chelsea Manning and Jeremy Hammond, as well as the PDX MeshNet. For more information about this event, please visit kboo.fm and look on the right side of the page under Community Events. Next week, April 4th, on Prison Pipeline, host Karen James will be interviewing Terry Moss, the police chief of St. Helens, Oregon, about crisis intervention training. Crisis intervention training is a training that helps equip police officers with skills needed to respond to mental health crises and to keep those in crisis from being incarcerated. That's April 4th at 6:30 p.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM. Thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
You can lock my body, but my mind is free.
Washington Post investigation revealed that of all fatal shootings by police in 2015, almost one quarter involved a person who was mentally unstable. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on April 4th to hear St. Helens Police Chief Terry Moss discuss how crisis intervention training is changing how police interact with people with mental illness and how police are helping to divert them from incarceration. That's Prison Pipeline, April 4th at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor Wamba, the Analog Cafe, Thursday, April 14th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and afrobeat styles. Thursday, April 14th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. in the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm. at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, April 14th at 7 p.m., KBOO at the Clinton will show Who Are My People? Who Are My People is a documentary film which follows four Native American elders as they seek to preserve cultural resources, including large geoglyphs, from the building of renewable energy facilities in California's Mojave Desert. Director Robert Lundahl will be in attendance. Again, that's Who Are My People, Thursday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.